Hello, my name is Jeremy Melder, and I'm the presenter from Beaming Green. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge that this podcast is being held on the traditional lands of the Bundjalung people and pay our respects to elders both past, present, and emerging. The Beaming Green podcast is a weekly podcast which will help you to take out some of the stress and confusion about how to live your life more sustainably. And we do this by introducing you to people that have first-hand experience and expertise in all aspects of sustainability, so you can get some amazing insights of how you can implement simple and practical solutions to enhance your life and the lives of your family. Hi, I'm really excited to be inviting today to our podcast Clara Marazecki, who is the Managing Director of the Australian Hemp Masonry Company, Australia's leading organisation in hemp building research. The company sources hemp from Australian farmers, manufacturers that are BCA compliant. Now, they supply hemp building materials to over 180 construction projects across all states in Australia, including two commercial projects. They've also won the prestigious 2018 HIA National Green Smart Award and also several Master Builders Awards. Clara is also a qualified educator delivering training in hemp building for builders, owner builders, and advising architects and building designers. She's been involved with hemp fiber farming since 1999 and with hemp construction research since the year 2000. Her work has included supporting the development of a hemp processing unit that she believes has the potential to transform where and how hemp building materials are processed for the Australian market. I'm really excited and look forward to welcoming Clara to our show. Clara, welcome to Beaming Green. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into hemp? How did you get interested in hemp?
At the time that I got involved, thank you very much firstly for the opportunity to talk about hemp on your program. At the time that I got involved with hemp, I was actually employed by Greening Australia. So I was working with an organisation that was involved in putting in wildlife corridors. So very much looking at vegetation issues. And in that process, I was also involved as Greening Australia's rep for a while on the community consultations over the Wadigan forest system on the central coast of New South Wales. So I got a fairly good understanding from spending some time in the forest of what actually happened. And because I was working for an organisation that was looking at land management more broadly, I became really aware of the other issues associated with deforestation, you know, the impacts on river systems, on headwaters, on the roads going into these forest coupes, the problems associated with monocultures and things like that. So I guess which were forestry's solution to deforestation at the time. So it really, when I looked at that whole scenario, what was really apparent to me, apart from understanding that trees have multiple functions and that it's, we don't just have forests there to cut down as a resource, they've got a massive role in giving us quality of life, really, both as far as water goes and as air quality goes, it became really obvious that we needed to look for an alternative biomass. And really, you get to hemp fairly quickly as soon as you start looking for a really productive biomass. And once I started looking at hemp, I also became aware of the ability of hemp to remediate soils. It's, you know, the fact that it's fantastic in crop rotations. The fact that it can be grown with a third of the water of Lucerne, you know, as we've shown on minimal irrigation trials in western New South Wales. The fact that it is a really climate resilient crop. So I guess I had a very strong awareness of the whole carbon scenario and how that was unfolding back in the 1990s and got involved then in hemp research, and so planted my first research crop in 1999 in Wollumbi. And at that stage, hemp wasn't legal to grow, but you could get a research license to prove that it was viable because at those times, back in the dark ages, all of the primary industries departments were saying that hemp wasn't viable in Australia and that it wasn't a suitable crop. So I started doing that work in 1999 and then through family association, really. So in my own family, there are a number of members of the building industry, and my brother, who I continue to work with, was very high up in research within the building industry, so materials research, engineering research, lean construction and those sorts of things, so quite a cutting-edge researcher. And I started working with researchers at New South Wales Uni in 2000 to start looking at an Australian binder for hemp building materials, because once I recognised that hemp had this potential as a building material, then the next thing to understand was the impact of importing that. And I think it's come home to us all now with COVID that we really need to be manufacturing in Australia. But if we weren't aware of it before, we should have been, because shipping of anything in the quantity that we're importing it in has got a radical impact on the ocean, in terms of pollution, in terms of poor fuel use or of really polluting fuel use. A lot of the ships that do actually transport the materials around the globe come a flag of convenience ships. So, for example, the company might be registered in Germany, but the ship is actually coming out of Bangladesh. So we've got these, you know, what they refer to as really old leaky hulls that are, or hulks that are travelling around the world distributing the things that we endlessly shop for. And in the meantime, bringing in introduced species into the Australian marine environment, and we've got all of these special zones around Australia that are really quite fragile ecosystems. But that all comes in when we keep on shopping online and bringing in more and more boats, you know, and I'm not even talking about the impact on actual coastlines or coral reefs or oil spills, which is topical again, unfortunately, at the moment, you know, that they are the risks that we
take. Absolutely. No, I agree.
So that was the beginning of doing Australian research. And we've really continued to do research ever since that time. So we're currently involved with University of Technology in Sydney and University of New South Wales and the University of Sydney in another large hempcrete research project.
And you've set up a company as well that you call Hemp Masonry?
Yes, that's right. So we set up a company in 2014, really prior to that. I was still working as a TAFE teacher and as a sustainability manager for North Coast Institute, and because there really wasn't, well, we hadn't commercialised. So we only commercialised in New South Wales in 2009. So that's when it became legal to grow fibre. It still wasn't legal to grow food. And in the Northern Territory, it was only legalised last year. So the, you know, so it's taken whatever that is, 20 years or something, or almost, for the legislation to unravel, you know, in all of the states so that we can even talk about having a national industry. That's only been this year that we could actually go,
so that's, okay. So that's New South Wales, Northern Territory.
All the states.
All the states all are the now, states now, now on board. So that's an opportunity, isn't it? So in terms of what are the products that you guys, what are you offering at Hemp Masonry? What
sort of... We offer, so we manufacture binders and renders in Sydney. And we also source hemp from Australian farms. We work with processors out at Ashford, which is just north of Inverell, who've developed a mobile processing system that's just being commercialised, and hopefully the first of those is going down to Tassie. Next year. So that I'm really hoping that that is an affordable regional solution for processing. So at the moment we currently source hemp from wherever we can, get that processed in Ashford and supply that. At the end of last year we had a short fall of hemp and we imported some hemp from the UK. But again, I suppose rather than choosing to import from the major producers who aren't necessarily farming sustainably, we chose to source hemp from a company in the UK that is a sustainable farm. They've got a fantastic hemp business themselves, which is, I guess, me balancing the pros and cons of if you are going to import, where do you do that from? And then quickly reverted back to getting Australian supply. And I think this year we'll be able to negotiate earlier with more farmers because we can see a bit of a trend of what's happening. It's not a rapidly growing industry, but it is definitely a growing industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think as education slowly gets out to the to Australian consumers about the characteristics of hemp building,
yep.
and why you would build with hemp and where the savings are to be made, you know, and what the benefits are, that interest is certainly growing, and there's certainly strong interest from sustainable building designers and architects. You know, well, there's no doubt about that.
What are some of the advantages of building with hemp? Why is it more sustainable than any other than other building products?
Well, for a number of reasons, and it is, I suppose, the answer in the short,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, the short answer is the thermal performance.
Yep.
The thermal performance is quite extraordinary. So because it is both insulative because of its porous structure, it's also light thermal mass, and it has also got fantastic hygrothermal performance.
Mm-hmm.
That combination, so hygrothermal performance is the management of humidity and moisture in the yes. atmosphere. So a hemp building system is a breathable wall system. So you get this very good management of condensation and humidity within buildings, which means that it's very, very comfortable. And we've got sort of data, as in anecdotal data from people who are living in homes. So we've been building homes for 10 years now in Australia using Australian materials, and there are about 180 homes built, a couple of commercial builds. So we're getting really good feedback from occupants. But the UK government actually invested quite heavily in measuring those outcomes and looking at life cycle analysis, looking at occupational energy use. So they funded a number of projects to look at renewable housing solutions, and they're really trying to deal with the exact same scenario we're trying to deal with. So in Australia, well, not exact, but very close.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, 18% of our overall carbon footprint comes from the building sector.
Wow.
Which is quite chunky. And then there's this other aspect, which is that a huge amount, and I don't have the exact data, but a huge amount of waste to landfill also comes from the building sector. And that's not just an issue about space, that's an issue about methane emissions. So really we all happily talk about carbon, but we need to be talking more broadly about carbon, about methane, about nitrous oxide. And all of those things are relevant to growing hemp. So okay. because I can grow a big biomass with less input of artificial fertilisers. In fact, you can grow very successfully organically is what they're showing in Europe. But because I can do that, I've reduced my nitrous oxide emissions. When I'm farming it, I'm actually locking up a tonne of soil carbon per hectare. I can potentially harvest off, if it's a fibre crop, 15 tonnes of biomass
wow.
in 3 to 4 months' time. Then I can bank that in a building. Quite literally, so I can lock that carbon up. So, you know, that is obviously one of the advantages of building with hemp. But if I go back to the actual performance, what they measured there was that you have an energy reduction between the embodied energy in the product.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really talk about the embodied energy of your television, for example, or your chair, or any other thing that we're putting into Australian housing at the moment. But people who are talking about renewable building materials do really need to talk about these things. So when they looked at it and analysed after 2 years of occupancy, the figure they came up with was 50 to 80% reduction in energy use
wow.
in a hemp building compared to a conventional brick and block building of the same size. So that's a very hefty thing. And then they've done further research where they've looked at what is the impact of retrofitting in hemp on buildings that were built, for example, in the Victorian era or just standard block and brick homes, and the savings that can be made there again in energy consumption are really significant. So you've got a cost saving, you've got an energy reduction, you've got really unusual thermal comfort. So people living in a home in Mudgee, for example, plus 40 for more than a week, not hotter than 29 inside the home with just portable fans running.
Wow.
People in Sydney and in colder regions, you know, where it's down to 7 or lower temperatures, it's not colder than 17.
Mm.
So there's this immediate moment where with hemp where I don't need to turn on my heating.
Yeah. So that's
as early, and it's a saving of 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then when I do turn it on, because the space is more effective to heat up, I have to have my heating on for less time.
Yeah.
So there's really good data on that kind of, okay. you know, so it's really been measured.
Yeah, that's
well, in Europe. So that's why, well, they're one of, so thermal performance is one. Acoustic performance is another, so it has quite unusual acoustic characteristics. The fact that it's recyclable, so if I built a home and decided in 30 years' time that, well, I really want to take the back extension off and I want to build something else, I could reuse those same materials. I would need to add more binder, but I could really crumble it up and use it again. Or I could put it out into my yard. You know, so I could be using it as landfill. That's also pretty extraordinary in a building material. So really, thermal performance, acoustic performance, indoor air quality.
That's what I was going to ask you about. So if people have got allergies or whatever, is hemp the answer for people that have got allergies?
I think, look, the research seems to indicate that, yes, that is the case. And we're about to undertake some research at UTS in the coming 12 months looking at some of those issues so that we can actually gather some more data. But what we do know is that because of this high growth thermal performance where it is always wicking moisture out, what happens is that you've got really good indoor air quality. So a major problem in homes are moulds, and you don't get moulds in hemp buildings growing in the same kind of way. So moulds in buildings is a massive problem in Australian buildings and overseas. We know that moulds are connected really closely to allergies, yep. So both respiratory and skin allergies, and we know that hemp homes don't harbour those moulds because yep. Lime in itself is antifungal, and then the hemp itself is also antifungal.
Okay, I didn't know
that.
So
that's not to say that you can't get any mould on the surface of a building at all, but what we know is that we don't get that penetrating the space. So really we've got this breathable wall system that is, yes, clearing the air within your building on a regular basis, and you've also got a real reduction in moulds in your building. We've certainly had anecdotal feedback from people who suffer from asthma who've said, oh, look, I'm just finding it really good in this extension that we've built here. But we don't have clear data.
Yep.
We do know the situation, though, with moulds, so that's well documented everywhere overseas. So it's more about us quantifying that. But there is every indication that, yes, we are substantially improving the indoor air quality in a hemp home by comparison to a material that is off-gassing or out-gassing really a myriad of toxins.
So, for example, in the north coast where we live, in the northern New South Wales, quite humid, right? If we were living in a hemp house, would that sort of reduce the humidity levels inside, indoors, do you think?
Well, absolutely. So what we found, I have to emphasise that with everything to do with hemp building, if there isn't the same attention to detailing, to fully finishing a building, you're not going to get all of the outcomes that you would get potentially out of hemp building.
Yep.
But the first home that was built at Billancliffs in 2009. And we only had, at that stage, I only had enough hemp for the bottom story. So the bottom story, which was a battery storage room and a guest accommodation, was finished and the owners went overseas. On their return, they were so impressed with the fact that even though their building had been shut while they'd been away, and they'd been away for some months and it had covered the humid season, that they come back to Billancliffs and there was no mould on any of their clothing and no mould on their leather sandals, etc., which everyone in the Northern Rivers is familiar with. Don't lose your leather sandal in the garden, because before you know it, it's actually started growing a little bit of a fungus on it and you won't recognise it as a sandal anymore. So they had come back and they actually sought out the Echo at the time and got a story written for the Echo saying that they'd come back from Switzerland and come back to this house that was built with hemp and they had no mould in their home. So there's every indication that it would be very, very effective and preferable to a lot of materials, particularly I imagine brick and block construction in this region, because that's where you have the highest levels of moulds in buildings that have a lot of concrete in them, really. So, yes, there definitely is the opportunity for people to have a much lower level of moulds.
Okay. We'll be back in a moment.
My name is Maya, and some people know me as the Tooth Fairy. I produce a product called Tooth Tonic, which is a great natural alternative to toothpaste. It's made from selected essential oils that I chose for their oral health-giving properties – Two drops on a dry toothbrush after flossing will help keep your gums and teeth healthy. Just as healthy plants need healthy soil, healthy teeth need healthy gums. Tooth Tonic comes in three optional flavors: mint, fennel, or mint plus. It's plastic free. And to win your free bottle of Tooth Tonic, go to the Beaming Green website and register your name and email address. Winners will be announced at the end of September.
Welcome back. You were saying that the small farming model is something you're trying to get more enhanced in Tasmania. Is that's where you're starting? What do people need to do if they want to get involved in hemp farming? How do they start off doing this? You know, if they want to get away from, in our area we've got sugarcane, someone wants to, you know, get into doing hemp, because look, this is a way of potentially a way of building in the future, right? What do people need to do?
Oh, absolutely. I think it definitely is a way of building in the future. And I suppose what I'll quickly mention there is that one thing that is extraordinary about hemp in its appearance is that you can build a hemp house that looks like a really beautiful rustic home that might be naturally rendered and, you know, there are uneven surfaces. That's one option. Or the other option is to build a building just like the bank building down the road, where you would never know, you know, all white rendered, you would never know that it was a hemp home or a hemp commercial building. So you've got all the functionality but none of the rustic look. So I'll just emphasise that. And then as far as talking about small scale, yes, that is my major interest. And I've stayed involved in the farming industry for that reason. If we look at sustainable supply of hemp building materials, then ideally we would be moving them at a maximum 5 hours distance, you know, 4 to 5 hours distance from where they're farmed and processed into buildings. And that's certainly, at the moment, we're sending hemp from New South Wales all over Australia. We're working with companies in several states. So, for example, Western Australia will have processing happening. So we work really closely with Hemp Homes Australia over there. They use our binder. We did supply them with hemp from New South Wales initially. They're now supplying their own hemp. Rather than our interest really being to pursue the Tasmanian market as a setup, it's Tasmania really needed a solution. So Tasmania is farming close to 2,000 hectares of grain, and their agreements in the past have been that the fibre from that was burnt. If we are measuring emissions, then that's possibly the worst scenario that you could imagine. Apart from that, there's quite a lot of hemp building starting to get happening in Tassie, and people in Tasmania are paying a fortune in freight to get that there. And I have to take my hat off to all of the early adopters who have gone out there on a limb to build with hemp to try and get the message out and to build a show home in their region so other people can see what hemp is like, because they have all borne the brunt of that extra freight cost. But forgetting cost, if we're just looking at what is a sustainable model is that regions 4 to 5 hours apart should be able to supply hemp for the region around them. The work that I've been doing, and it really hasn't been my work, it's been more that I'm a very strong supporter and there have been injections of energy and time rather than any financial investment in the Ashford processor. But I've really persisted working with those farmers out there because I could see that they were coming up with a processing solution, which is a mobile processing unit in a 40-foot container that can be moved around on a tilt truck.
Wow.
So it could be put on your property here, or it could actually go to neighbouring farms, or it could be put on a tilt truck and moved a few hours away. So all with reasonable cost and keeping that footprint low. So I am very optimistic for them that a lot of smaller regions see that as a solution. To me, it's a really critical thing, because as soon as you start some kind of hemp industry, other than micro-industry, and we've got a lot of micro-industry here in the Northern Rivers, you know, so we've got quite a lot of people who are growing 2 hectares for grain or some other purpose, but that's actually really not enough hemp to be putting on a B-double to be moving to a processor. So that, you know, it's a little more complex, but if there was a small-scale processor in this region, then, for example, people could bring their small quantities, or we could work out some kind of cooperative approach to get that all to a more centralised place. But the thing, or the beauty to me of the smaller scale processing rather than investment in really huge processing, is that there isn't the debt accumulated where suddenly you're scrambling for, okay, where are we selling most of this stuff? Because certainly the hemp industry, building industry, is on its way in Australia, and we are out there, you know, educating mainstream about it. But it isn't going to support a massive processor anytime in the short term. Whereas this smaller processing unit really would mean that a, let's say, Tenterfield community could, in theory, get a processor for the region around there. They could be processing their hemp not into long fibre for the factory that doesn't exist really in Australia, but into other mulch products, for example, just to keep it very basic, for housing and for animal bedding. This processing system bags that so that they could essentially supply directly into housing. But I think that what happens in a region, or from what I see happening in Tasmania, is that as soon as you start to put together parts of the picture, all of these other things emerge. So suddenly you've got somebody down the road who's saying, well, if that's there, then it probably is worthwhile putting us in, you know, us putting in 5 hectares, and we might take some of that off for grain. We might make a couple of really nice body care products that we're going to sell in the local markets and, you know, perhaps put into a few local shops. We'll supply our own community. We might make the, you know, and there are a whole variety of other, it could be charcoals, it could be, you know, strings and rope making, you know, these are the basic ones. But really, there is a huge array of products that can be made out of hemp, and the value add doesn't have to be on a massive scale. There will be massive scale. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You know, we finally got to where even CSIRO are saying the hemp industry is here. It might take, unfortunately, they say it's probably going to be another 20 or 30 years before it's fully realised. And at that point, I think, oh, no, you don't understand the willpower of the Australian people. Here they all come. Yeah. You know, we're going to be able to accelerate that. But it is, you know, prohibition is over.
Yeah.
And now we just need lots of community support to start moving that forward. And I think some of the tools are there for that now with, you know, this smaller scale, lower investment required processing.
So in terms of investment, what would, you know, your 40-foot container with this equipment roughly cost?
Roughly, I would say it cost about $190,000.
And if you got, you know, 10 farmers that are in the area and they all contributed, like you mentioned, could be a cooperative and they can share this machine around, that's economically viable, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So I've heard you say that, you know, hemp is definitely a more sustainable building material. Do you have any statistics on costs of building, say, an average home? Do you have an idea of what it would cost for someone to build either themselves or, I'm sorry to put you on the spot if that's...
That's such a difficult thing to answer because there are so many variables in there, but I can answer it in generalised terms. So firstly, I'd say that to build with hemp, is the cost of it depends on your design. So when we're building with hemp, probably one day out of every 3 days on site is spent moving formwork. 2 days are installing hemp. So the more complex my design, the more complex my formworking, the slower the process, the more expensive the build. Designers in Sydney, for example, who we work quite closely with, will equate it in price to reverse brick veneer, a well-insulated reverse brick veneer.
Okay.
That's if you're getting builder-built.
Yep.
The thing that is lovely about hemp is that there are a number of scenarios that are available. So, yes, I can either get my home builder-built and then it will be perhaps, you know, depending on the fixtures and in finishings and all of those things, it may come out as 10% more expensive than brick. If I'm building a top-end building, if I'm just looking at the materials component of that, hemp is not an expensive building material. So the money is really in the labour. There are a couple of situations that are evolved. So we deliver quite a lot of training, and we deliver training to owner builders and to builders and to building designers and architects. And then we really work after people do a workshop with them. We work with them in the long term to make sure they're supported on their first build, because our goal was really to get good builds up. You know, I guess the scary thing was you come in with a new product and then you get some not good houses built and suddenly that's the end of the story of hemp building. So getting building code compliant, really well-built homes was very, very critical for us, and going slowly and getting that right was more important than whipping up a whole lot of things. In the process, we've trained a lot of owner builders.
Yes.
And something that to me personally is very exciting is a number of those are women.
Yeah.
And so there have been a number of single mums who have successfully installed their own hemp homes and have built extensions or have, you know, done little builds. And that in itself is exciting. It's a light material to work with in that way. There's also an in-between. So there's the owner build. There are also people who we've trained who are excellent installers.
Right.
So there's the option for somebody who is an owner builder to engage a hemp installer to work alongside them as crew as well on their build. They often have mixers, you know, so that all comes into the equation. So there are these sort of three opportunities that are available. And I would say that, you know, when you're, the materials themselves are very affordable. Mm. Building as an owner builder is very affordable.
Yeah.
You probably fairly close to half the price on a build if it's an owner build and you're just buying direct.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, I, you know, was doing this mud brick course in Wollongong or Nowra, and, you know, they were saying that you could run a workshop. You know, so for example, you know, hemp masonry could run a workshop on how to build, you know, even the basics of building your home. And it's sort of, I think, you know, we've got to go past the whole, whilst I respect having builders around, but, you know, we can do some of this stuff ourselves as a community. It's about helping each other to, you know, build a home, which is what used to happen a long time ago, but doesn't happen so much now. So it's more of a community-based effort. So if there was training courses available of how to build a, you know, set up formworks and what sort of approvals and things like that are needed to do, we can share that resource together. I know there are people that aren't capable of doing it and they haven't got the physical capability to do it, but I'm just saying, putting it out there for younger people that are wanting to build a lower-cost home, they can do this as a community, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't happen a lot. You're right, as of yet, community builds. Yeah. We do deliver quite a lot of workshops.
Yep.
There is a beautiful example of a community build down in Canoundra, actually, and it's called, there's a project called Realising for the Reeds, and it's a family there where there are triplets with muscular dystrophy. And those children are now in their teen years, and so there was a need for a much bigger home for them because they're all wheelchair bound.
Mm.
And that, starting from the designer to a number of the building materials suppliers, including ourselves, and really we were a tiny component, although it's a very big build.
Yeah.
And they've just done a subsequent very big hydrotherapy build, you know, so for a hydrotherapy pool for those young people. But that really has been the Canoundra community raising that house from the ground for that family. And it has come together with, they've had high school students on work experience working on it. They've certainly had some builders involved.
Yep.
But yes, it is really, really very possible for a community to come together and do these more substantial builds. And really what happens at the moment with workshops is that people will often join us for a workshop and then we'll link them with, either they'll create a network themselves or we'll link them with other people. So people will come in and help each other on their projects. So that also happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to say, you know, don't go with a builder, because I think builders have a lot of experience and a lot of value to add there too. And coming to that, I was going to say, do you have, for our listeners, a list of, you know, in the Northern Rivers or people that you've dealt with that have trained in dealing with hemp? That, you know, if anyone's wanting to build a house with hemp, that they can approach?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I'd be really happy to send through to you the names of some builders and their contact details if you're happy to publish that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, there are, there's, you know, varying levels of publicity. People have been in the industry shorter and longer, so it's very likely that people in the region aren't aware that more people are actually trained up.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I would really, if anybody's travelling Myokum way, there is an absolutely beautiful owner build on Myokum Road.
Okay.
That is worth, I know that the owner builders who've done that build have said, quite a few people have stopped and said, what is that?
Yeah.
But it's a absolutely beautifully built, owner built
home. How long ago was it built?
It was just, well, they're still working on the building. The hemp is all installed.
Yep.
So they're now doing the other parts of that project. And I think the mixer left there about a week and a half ago.
Okay,
so
it's very fresh.
On site, they're training a builder actually on site who'd recently done training with us. So just to also, I suppose, mention to people at the moment that our workshops used to be 2 days of face-to-face and then additional support after the workshop online. And I've had to change that because of COVID restrictions and travel, and we very often had people travelling from interstate or even from overseas coming to workshops. So now we're running that training through three sort of fairly significant Zoom sessions plus hands-on experience, so that combination, and that way I can make sure that builders aren't loaded up with too many people on site. We've mostly avoided the group, or we can negotiate around the hands-on training to space that out if that's a better arrangement for builders or for myself to work with them. So, but people can get training, and I think we've probably, after, you know, whatever it is, it's to however many years, 10 years or so, we've accumulated a lot of really, really good images to share with people through that training, so that we can talk through the retrofitting scenario, the new building, commercial building, all of those different scenarios, and show people examples of that. So perhaps in some way we can share more information in this way than actually in a face-to-face workshop. And I've had really lovely feedback from the builders who did that preliminary course. So I'd encourage people, don't, you know, to keep going with your ideas and learning in this time. And it is possible to engage and to do a lot of planning. And we are very supportive, as in it's not an unusual thing for me to get a phone call from somebody who's just started their build after a few months after a workshop, sending me a photo of a mixer saying, this is what's happening in the mixer. Can you, you know, give us some tips? And then sometimes it's that I get them to film themselves, their mix, you know, and then they'll send that to me. I give them feedback, give them some tips, get them to redo it, send it to me. So really our goal was to be, to give really good technical support. We certainly have the background in our board, both in sustainable design and in engineering, to give people that kind of technical support. And I think that is going to be the most positive way forward.
Yeah. You know, so. And I noticed that you've got some social media presence and so on. If people wanted to get in touch with you to ask any questions, they can use, what's the best way of communicating with you? Is it social media or is it through your email?
It's probably through our website is the easiest probably, or Facebook. So we have the Australian Hemp Masonry Company Facebook page.
Yep.
That's a great place to go to look at a lot of images, because there are a lot of photographs hidden in those posts over the years, you know, to get an idea of, okay, how does someone use mineral oxides beautifully in a wall? You know, can you build nooks? Can I have a deep window seat? What happens if I've already got my frame up and I, you know, don't know what to do, or I've already got a steel shed?
Yep.
And everyone says, oh, you know, steel sheds and hemp aren't great together. Well, how do I do that? And it, all of those things are possible. So you can get really good information through images from our Facebook. And then our website, which is www.hempmasonry.com.au, or look up the Australian Hemp Masonry Company, that's got some award-winning builds up there in the gallery.
Yeah, they look wonderful.
So, you know, so that's and lots of information embedded in there. And contact us through that website. That really ends up coming back to me fairly quickly in that, you know, so there's certainly someone who helps me with email, but if there are curly questions, or if it's a building designer wanting to know more, or a builder, then, you know, or somebody with a crazy idea that they want to discuss, then, you know, pretty soon that gets back to me. And we're also, I mean, we're not interested in trying really crazy things, but we certainly are pushing the envelope always in different ways of applying it. And, okay, how would we do a retrofit if this was the scenario? What would be the whole, you know, setup for that? So
there's one question I forgot to ask you, which I'm going to ask you now, is that we've had, you know, probably the worst fire season known on history, I'd say. From a fire retardant perspective, how does hemp stand?
Well, it's a really impressive material as far as fire goes, in that it doesn't ignite. So if I put a small hemp block, for example, on a gas burner, and you'll commonly see when you're looking up hempcrete that, you know, someone's got a gas flame pointed at a wall and it's there for 10 minutes or something, and you show that there hasn't been an impact. So we've certainly had a block of material on a gas flame for an hour and we can show that there's no ignition and there's no smoke or there are no fumes coming from that. We've also done further testing where we've built a fire. So this is through the Building Construction Research Centre. And my brother, who's a professor, was a professor at New South Wales Uni, so he works with building materials, built up a fire to 600 millimetres height and kept that going to simulate an ember attack. What we do know and is that we don't get ignition. So even if, for example, the render on a building were missing, and you have to render a hemp home on the outside, yeah, so for weather and for fire.
Yeah.
As much as it looks beautiful, you still have to do that.
Yeah.
We're after durability and long-term durability. Mm, mm. But let's say that, you know, a tree fell on your house and the hemp wall was actually damaged and so the render is no longer there. What we would find is that you might get a fire, or not fire, but some smouldering that will occur within that wall where the fire has actually been introduced to the wall. But what we know is that it will be days and days and days before that section around that would turn to, and it would eventually turn to ash, just like a brick home will burn down in that kind of scenario. But really, you probably have a week to come back to that home and go, oh, there's a little bit of a, you know, burn mark there. We could just repair that, put that out and repair that. So really quite phenomenal in terms of fire performance, you know, so without really toxic flame retardants. So this is, again, the lime is fire retardant in itself. The hemp and the lime combined mineralizes, and so we've actually got a mineralized material that is, you know, doesn't want to ignite. So yeah, absolutely fantastic opportunities in that.
I'm glad I got to ask you that question, because that's been something that I was thinking about, you know, with the you know, with our climate, that we're, you know, global warming is apparently happening. I don't know. There's a rumour about it anyway.
It's been around for quite a long time, that one.
So I thought I'd ask that, because I think that'll be on a lot of people's minds, particularly down south near southern part of New South Wales, where there was a lot of fire there and devastation there that seems to have unfortunately been forgotten because we've got a pandemic now. So.
Oh, absolutely. You really feel for the people in those communities.
No, I do too.
Sort of wave after wave. I would emphasise again, though, that it is really about all of the detailing, that no matter how good my walling material, if I don't have insulation under my roof, under my ridge capping on my roof, and the fire comes and one of those sheets of metal lifts up off my roof and gets into my roofing frame, then that is my building burning from the inside out.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't emphasise
devil's
that
in the detail.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Look, Clara, I've really enjoyed your time. I really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us so much information to digest. And, look, I will be sharing all your links that you're going to send me through, and I hope that people will support hemp building in the future. I think it's something that's really we need to get on board and support, because it's local and, you know, and it's sustainable. And that's what, you know, Beaming Green is about. It's about trying to promote sustainability in all parts of our life, and this is one of those. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being part of the Beaming Green podcast. The music for this podcast is produced by Dave Weir. Now, we need more people to get on board and raise awareness about sustainability and climate change. The more of us that are shining the light on these issues, the more governments and business leaders will listen. We would love you to subscribe to our podcast and share and engage in social media so that we can get some traction. Let's support one another and envision a brighter future. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.